Open up to Proverbs 18. We'll come back to this later, or you can just look up front. We'll have the verses up there for you. So Proverbs 18:24. As I was looking at verses on friendship, this one is such a cool key one. And this little proverb was written somewhere around 2,500 years ago, but it was written for today, to this culture and time, and it speaks into this topic. And it reads this way from the ESV. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You know, with our social media, we've never had been more connected or have more friends or followers, depending on what your favorite medium you're using is, than we have today. But at the same time, I believe we've never had in our society, with all these friendships, these companions, more ruin in relationships. And so this is an important topic. And I want to, and actually when I was thinking about that, because it's really true, there, having many companions or modern friendships would be another way of translating that, doesn't keep us from ruin. And I actually had to go and look at my Facebook because I wasn't even sure how many friends I had. And I discovered I have 151 friends.
Whoa, you've got more than me.
Oh, I was thinking that's kind of sad. I was expecting, oh, poor Craig, man. He doesn't have very many friends. I got 300. Or I saw one of the friends, they had about 1,000. And, so actually I'm kind of surprised it was even that many, because I'm a lousy Facebook friend. I hardly ever post anything, and I'm kind of ruthless in who I accept as friends, just because, I feel like I want to know the person if I'm going to befriend them, and I'm not trying to win a popularity contest through Facebook. And okay, now you didn't laugh, so I just want to tell you that be careful. You should laugh, or I might unfriend you. Okay, but thank you. Drum roll. And so all that being said is, so Jill and I want to speak into friendships, and this is important because the revelation I had is that there is so much written, so many books, so many magazine articles, so many conferences and seminars on marriage and on parenting, and I personally don't know any book on friendship. You know, and when's the last time you went to a friendship conference, you know, and or seminar or weekend or something like that? And so it's something that's missing. And Jill and I at first were thinking, what are we going to say on this? You know, like what, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, we got too much that God has a lot to say into this. And so we'll hopefully hit some keys.
So, as Craig said, you know, there's different kinds of friendship. There's nothing wrong with having Facebook friends. You know, that's perfectly okay, except in a way the fact that we call them friends is a little bit unhelpful, because they're not really friends, are they? All of them. Some of them might be, but a lot of them are just acquaintances. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with keeping in touch in that way. There's nothing wrong with having casual friends, people you hang out with, people you've got common interests with, people that you enjoy doing stuff with once in a while. You know, there's a lot of different people I might call up and say, hey, do you want to do this, depending on what I'm doing, because I know they would enjoy it and we'd enjoy doing it together. There's nothing wrong with that. But you got to have some real close, deep friendships. You've got to have some people that you can really bear your soul with and feel like there's just a real connection and a real safety there. It's those kind of friends, like that person who knows that they could call you at 3 a.m. because their car broke down and they need a rescue, or the person who can call you when they're in a real crisis and bounce stuff off you, ask for your opinion, because they know that you're going to be a safe place. You're not going to judge them, but you're going to give them truth. You're going to come alongside them pray for them, be there for them in those kind of situations. You know, this is the kind of person who would call you first if they got a promotion at work, or if they got engaged, or if some crisis happened, right? We need those kind of people in our lives. You can enjoy all the casual friendships. Great, go for it. But you've got to have at least a few. And really, it can only be probably at the most 4 or 5, maybe even fewer than that, of those real close friendships.
You know, and so from that Proverbs verse about a man or woman of many companions can come to ruin, you know, we can come to ruin because we don't have, you know, just a couple of those close kind of friendships. And we can come to ruin emotionally. We can come to ruin in our character. We can come to ruin in decisions we make because we got no friend to kind of bounce stuff off of. We can come to ruin in relationships and careers. We can come to ruin in our integrity. So this is what makes friendships really important. And so what's really needed in our day of modern friendships is we need to find some postmodern friendships and a new way of understanding friendships. And so the first thing we're wanting to say this morning is that we want to build our relationships on love. And you can kind of look over at Matthew chapter 22. And so this is foundational. This passage, this commandment of God on love is foundational to friendship, to romance, to love, to marriage, to any kind of relationship you want to talk about. This is the starting point. And so this is why I wanted to start here. And so in Matthew 22, verse 37 through 39, it's a great commandment. You all know it. And God, or Jesus, says that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. In other words, with all of who you are. This is the great and first commandment. But then he goes on to say, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. And so love is God's foundation for all relationships. First, love God. Then, once you got that one, and it doesn't mean, you know, wait on the others, but that is priority. Second, love your neighbor and also love yourself. And in reality, most every problem in the world comes from wrong relationships. Think about it. Most problems in our world, in our home, in our lives come from wrong relationships. So when we do not love God, or not love others, or if you don't love yourself, there's going to be problems. So the world needs great friendships built on love. And Jesus, and what's cool about this in John 13, and I'll be coming back to this also, but he says this is so important, this commandment, that he spoke once. He said it many times in different ways. And so he says in the Gospel of John, verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. And it's new partly in that God had never showed up in flesh and blood. Jesus showed up, God himself, and demonstrated what love looks like, what friendship looks like. And so, and he is saying that, did you catch that? I like how he said, just as I have loved you. Now you can see what it looks like. So now as you see it in me, in my loving you, loving others, you love like that. But then verse 35 says, by this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. In other words, your friends in the world, your friends in school, your friends at work need to see that your love for your church friends is something extraordinary if they're ever going to be attracted to God in the first place. Sometimes we think we can, you know, we can have a mountain of problems and troubles and do nothing about it in our relationships, with people, even people we say we love, but say we love God and expect them to still want to know that God. So it begins with the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And then from that place will flow a love into our friendships that not just transforms us, but something that the world itself deeply needs. So we build friendship on love. Now we got to talk more about that. So the second point of this morning is we want to develop friendships with others, meaning it needs to be intentional. We need to develop these things because the world needs to see, not just in marriage, not just in parenting, but in friendships, what love can look like. And like I said, what's interesting is it's noticeably absent any teaching, any training, any examples on this. And I think it's becoming very confused in our culture. And it's important enough that we demonstrate love in our friendships because, as I said, most problems come when there is a broken love, a relationship that's not right. And so we want to relate rightly to each other. 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 3, you're not going to turn there, but it even says in that without love, you're nothing. So that's how important it is for us to understand how love works in friendship. So friendships, the first thing we want to say in developing a friendship with others, what are some handles, what are some keys to this, is that friendship is a choice. Now, I said I'd come back to Proverbs 18:24. It says in this, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You know, there's different words used for love in the Bible. Agape is you know, the godly, the divine love. There's a passionate love, a love, you know, where you need. And hey, we're talking about love. So part of that is sex. And so there's a romantic love that you have in marriage with each other. But there's also one, a phileo from, you know, that's where Philadelphia comes from, you know, brotherly love. And so there needs to be this love by choice in friendships, but friendship is different than all other relationships because it's a choice. You didn't get to pick your parents, okay? They were given to you. And parents, you didn't get to pick your kids. They were born. And siblings, brothers, sisters, you don't get to pick them. Mom and dad just stuck you with them, all right? And in that way, friendship is unique. It's not a lesser love. It's a love of choice that you give to someone. Sometimes we think that it's, you know, we categorize it as somehow a failing, a lesser love. But no, it's actually profound because it's given freely. Friendship is even different than marriage because once marriage, you get to choose your spouse, you know, at least in this country. And that might be another topic for another time. Jill and I actually had someone said, hey, you know, a young lady saying, I'm tempted to have you guys arrange a marriage for me, you know? And no, we don't want that, you know, that business. But just to say that we look at even failing marriages and think, well, maybe it shouldn't be a choice. Maybe someone that really knows as well should do the choosing, but I'm off topic. So
yes, come back.
Right? How are we doing? Yeah. Friendship's still okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the topic, though.
Okay. So marriage is a choice, but once entered into, think about it. Marriage comes with expectations and obligations. Friendship doesn't. Friendship doesn't have those things built into it for it to work. Usually a friendship forms because you recognize that you have something in common with somebody, a common interest, a hobby. You know, one of those, hey, you too? And all of a sudden, it's like you feel a connection to that person, right? Kind of like, oh, yeah, I think that way. I feel that way. I like doing those kind of things. And you enter it freely, and it's not forced upon you. Friendship makes no demands and has no commitments. Friendship comes without obligations, and any commitment or expectations that are created are done so by free choice. So in that way, that makes phileo, that makes friendship a profound thing.
another thing that's really profound about friendship is it's non-sexual. And we need to talk about this because it's just one of those things that in our current culture it gets a little fuzzy and a little bit confusing. Because we really need relationships where we can be transparent and feel safe and be ourselves without fear that me opening up is some kind of sexual advance, right? And it's not that sex is bad, but God designed sex to be this very special thing for a husband and wife to enjoy in the context of a marriage, right? And if we're not, this isn't a sermon on sex, so I'm not going to give all the background on that now. If you want the biblical background for it, I've got a list of about 25 verses you can look up. I'd be happy to make a copy of it for you. Maybe we should do a sermon on sex sometime. That'd be kind of...
Pants? Anyway.
So anyway, God makes it very clear that a marriage between a man and a woman is the only place that he intended a sexual relationship
and
to
and
be.
And I will say, when we do... premarital counseling or marital counseling or marriage seminars, sometimes, I mean, in those we do talk about that. So there's some incentive to sign
yes,
up for those things.
It's not a taboo. But because that's the only place that God intended us to have that kind of relationship, we desperately need non-sexual friendships. Our spouse can't be our only friend. Craig is great, but he cannot be everything to me. And it's not fair for me to expect him to be that. So I've got to have other friendships. And if this is the only place for sex, there's got to be room for other friendships that don't where you don't have sex, right? And if you're single and you've got no spouse, you've got to have human contact. You've got to have physical contact, intellectual contact, emotional contact, spiritual connections. So you've got to have some relationships where you can feel connected to people without feeling sexual pressure. And it used to be that same-sex relationships were completely safe in this way. Because, you know, of course, with the opposite sex, you can still have a degree of friendship. Of course you can. But you do need to be careful not to cross appropriate boundaries in those kind of friendships. So, you know, you're going to hang out in a group. Or if you do need to have a one-on-one meeting, you're going to do it in a public place, that kind of stuff. But with the same sex, you used to be able to laugh and cry and hug and put a hand on an arm and, you know, just really have physical contact and all kinds of contact without someone thinking that you meant anything more than, hey, I'm your friend, I'm here with you. And our culture has, of course, redefined what's okay in sexual relationships rather than letting God and the Bible define what's okay in a sexual relationship. So our culture has decided, you know what, same gender sexual relationships are okay, they're even good. So that means that any relationship in your life could have the possibility of becoming sexual. So opening up and being vulnerable with someone of the same gender may not necessarily feel safe like it used to. So rather than being a place of openness and freedom, those kinds of really close friendships could easily become more of a place of temptation where we feel like, oh, I've got to have a guard in any relationship. And that's especially important if you're single because it could begin to feel like there's absolutely no safe place to touch someone. There's no safe place for physical contact. And you know what? We need human contact. We need physical contact as human beings. You know, babies who aren't held don't thrive. And I found a little article from Psychology Today. It was written in May of last year, so just a few months ago. It's titled, 8 Reasons Why We Need Human Touch More Than Ever in a Digital Age. And so I'm just going to list off the 8 real quick. It's a pretty compelling list. Physical touch decreases violence. It increases trust between individuals. It communicates compassion. It decreases disease and strengthens your immune system. Wow. It strengthens team dynamics. It increases non-sexual emotional intimacy between people. It increases engagement in learning. They found that even just a teacher patting a kid on the head, they learn more. Huh. And then it increases our overall sense of well-being. So you know what? Paul, when he wrote his letters, he had great wisdom when he said at the end of 2 or 3 of them, he said, greet one another with a holy kiss. And we go, ooh. But you know, he hadn't even read the psychology behind it. There's some wisdom in that, okay? Well, in our culture, a handshake, a hug, you know, might be more appropriate. But the point is that we need the physical contact. And the lie today is that, oh, sex is just another form of physical touch. It's no big deal. And that is not true. It is a big deal. And it's supposed to be an exclusive big deal in marriage. And friendship is supposed to be a whole nother deal, a non-sexual deal. And this is an area, I believe, in this church that is really healthy. We were talking about this, and we just feel like people have a real freedom to just very genuinely express affection or comfort or compassion with a hug or whatever it is. You know, just there is appropriate, but it's appropriate. That's the point. It's appropriate physical touch. I don't think anybody's left feeling awkward. But you know what? We do need to be sensitive. That people who are coming in who are kind of new to the whole God thing and new to faith, you know, we just need to be a little bit careful and be aware that what to us is a very innocent thing to them could be misunderstood. So, you know, maybe ask permission. Can I give you a hug? Is that okay? You know, and just be a little bit cautious there. But at the same time, we can't let our culture make us afraid to make contact with one another. And we really need to protect the safety and the closeness of non-sexual friendships, and especially with the same gender. And we need to provide a safe place for people where physical touch is not misunderstood and where we can be really open and vulnerable with one another without the pressure and the temptation of, ooh, is this going to turn into a sexual thing? And I think you had some stuff to say
on that too. You know, our society, but you know, sex is awesome because God created, all right? It's like, yeah, you know, we're not embarrassed about it. You know, he made it for marriage. It's cool. But we become so sexualized in our language and our culture that we can hardly talk about anything without we thinking it's sexual or you know, getting confusing in this topic of friendships. But let me ask this question. How would you define the word intimacy? What comes to mind? What picture comes to mind when you hear intimacy? Doesn't it? You know, just if I asked you to write down, you probably write down, well, yeah, it's the kind of, you know, that's it's a sexual word, right? Intimacy. I have intimacy with somebody. But do you know what the word really means? The definition is a close friendship. That's what it means. So now it can even feel awkward to talk about intimacy in a friendship because, you know, it sounds like we're talking about something sexual, but it's not meant to be. There is no such thing as friendship with benefits. That's just really a bad idea, okay? There's no such thing as platonic sex, you know, because that's just an oxymoron, okay?
He's standing up. It's important to
him. And it's fun. You can have different kinds of friends. You have some friends that stay seated and put their hands in their pockets, others that stand up and face around. But oxymoron, you know, in the Latin means sharp and foolishness, meaning it's pointedly foolish, you know, and so to think about mixing two very different kinds of love into this thing and think it's still going to be healthy is moronic, you know, and so it's an oxymoron. We need to keep these things separated. And actually, we were wrestling with some of us about, because I always get help on the sermon titles, it's like, you know, it was suggested, what about bromance? So guys don't feel included in this topic. It's like, really? How many guys want to say, yeah, I got a bromance with my, you know, with my buddy Jim? You know, it's like, I ain't going there. You know, you cannot convince me to use bromance as a word to talk about an intimate friendship, all right? And we're also not going to use BFF.
Yeah, we looked it up in Urban Dictionary.
Because we discovered there's different meanings for that one. So just came out with friendship. Okay, so as we talk about, you know, I'm going to get past this. You get it. Friendships are not sexual. They're non-sexual. Can there be friendship in marriage? Yes, but marriage itself is something different than that, and it's more than just friendship. But friendships are needed. Mm-hmm. And so here we want to hit, you know, five things that talk about what are needed in friendship, and the first one's the no duh. Friendships are needed to have fun, okay? Mm-hmm. So life gets intense and it gets serious sometimes. And a real friend can lighten up the intensity with some serious fun. A friend knows when you don't need a lecture, you don't need a I told you so because of mistakes. You just need to go have some fun. There's a proverb that's not in the Bible that says, all work and no play makes Jack
a dull boy.
Dull. So he gets bored and he becomes boring because he's making everything serious in his life and work, and he needs to light, you need to say, lighten up, Jack, lighten up, dude, dudette, whatever, and let's go shopping. You figure out which gender you are, you know, in this, let's go
that
golfing, let's go to a movie, let's just get out of town, you know, and so, you know, help them have fun. And matter of fact, I've even scheduled, you know, man, I've, you know, I get so serious about fun, you know, work serious, fun is serious, that I, you know, on my day off, you know, certain times of the season, I schedule fun with a buddy, you know, like to go disc golfing. It's on the calendar, just like, you know, my work schedule is, because fun's important.
Fun's important, but we also need to be known, don't we? And this has to do with value. We need to know that I'm worth knowing. There's value in me that someone would want to know. And this is part of the power of Psalm 139, which I'm not going to read now, but that would be a great one to go to if you want to know how God feels about you and really wants to know you. It's just beautiful because it reassures us God does want to know us. He wants to know us really intimately, really deeply. He made each of us uniquely and specifically, and each one of us matters to God. And he knows everything that we do. He knows everything that we say. He knows our thoughts. He knows our attitudes. And the amazing thing is he still wants us to be part of his life and invites us into his life with him. But we need that from one another too. Because even though we're not God, sometimes God expresses that knowing and acceptance to us through other close friends, right? And we need to know and feel that there are people who you know what, they know the raw truth about me. They know some of the ugly stuff as well as the good stuff. But you know, they're still going to accept me. They're still going to want to be my friend. They know the truth, and it doesn't matter. They're still committed to me. And sometimes I think it seems easier for us to I'll just create an image. Because, you know, I think I know what someone would like, so I'll just be that. And you can do that more easily if your communication is through mostly text messages or certainly through social media. You can create a little image and say, that's who I think people are like, so that's who I'm going to be. There was a movie Craig and I watched a couple weeks ago called A Case of You, and it's this guy who he meets this girl, and you know, he's kind of awkward in the whole relationship thing, so he decides to go on her Facebook page and find out what she likes and be that. So he follows every post, everything. One of the funniest ones is she says, I like judo. So he signs up for judo classes and nearly gets killed. You know, turns out that her parents' dog name is judo. Anyway, but you know, you can try and he tries to create this image. And the cute thing is at the end of the movie, it turns out she likes him anyway. She knew about it all along. She was kind of messing with him. So, but he's trying to be this person because he wants her to like him. And you know, and we do that a little bit, you know, whether you do it through Facebook or just by creating an image, we do some of that. But the thing is that when you have these superficial sort of pretender poser kind of relationships, we don't like to call them that, but that's what they are. But they leave us feeling even more lonely than we were, because what runs through our mind is, well, if they knew who I really am, then they really wouldn't want to be my friend. And they only like me because I keep up this image, and they like that image. And then we just really begin to feel that who we really are is less and less lovable. And we begin to feel, you know, more and more lonely. And you know what? It takes courage to allow yourself to be known. It takes courage to take that step and open up. Many of you have done that. You've done that with mentors. You've done that with close friends here at church. Some of you have even stepped out and given testimonies in front of the whole church or a group of people or whatever. And isn't it awesome that when you do that, the funny thing is, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm going to be so exposed. They're going to think that's ugly. They're not going to want to know me. But the opposite's actually true. You open up, you tell people, and they respect you more for it. They like you more for it. Usually they can relate to you more because you don't have this little perfect image that who can relate to that, right? So actually we end up feeling more connected when we're more honest with people and we allow ourselves to be known. And as Christians and as a church, we really need to continue to provide a safe environment where people feel permission to let people know who they really are, and a place where they can be authentic and they can tell their story and people will listen and ask questions, point one another to God, forgive, and just appreciate knowing who each other really is, right?
Yeah, and I loved, I was just telling Joel, Friday the men put on a chilly night for the men, and the men's team is trying to create opportunities for men to get together. And we have a little tougher time, you know, I could swing a hammer, you know, with my buddy all day long and have no conversation. And Joel asks, hey, how was your time, you know, with so-and-so? It was good. You know, and that's about it. So we have the guys got to work a little harder at this being known stuff. And what I loved, and I wasn't a part of it at all, planning anything, but a couple of guys stood up and told their stories. And they just blow me away. You know, when I find out who those men were and see who Christ is in them today, it's like, holy moly. Wow. God is pretty amazing. And you know what? When we hear each other's stories and even the weaknesses and the failures, how many of you are drawn to a facade of strength? No hands. How many of you are drawn to someone that's honest and real and you see their weakness and there's something that draws you to it? Do you know the guys in this church, some of the strongest leaders are the ones that are more open and honest about their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And guys are drawn to that. They want to hang with them. So, you know, I just want to end with that on note is, especially guys, get together just to know them with no agenda. You know, it's I have the opportunity because of the role I play with the MP3 Regional Pastors Group to have lots of meetings with pastors. And, you know, I get together with them, and I think sometimes they're surprised that I'm getting together with no agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's certain, you know, pastors I get to get, if they want to get together, I know for a fact they want something. They need something. And I wish it wasn't shocking, you know, it was more the norm that I get together with some guy and he just wants to know me. That's pretty cool. So do that. Get together with someone and say, tell me your story. Where are you from? You know, what do you do? Because usually, not always, but what we do is a thing we're kind of passionate about, what we care about. You know, hey, where are you going? Tell me your story. And that is so much fun. And so I just wanted to end with that. I just applaud the men that are trying to know one another in a real way, a deeper way. And I just say more of it and do some one-on-ones, you know, get together. And obviously, ladies, do the same thing. You know, but I think you do that a little more naturally than us. But so I'm applauding it because I see it and I just say more.
And relationships also give us a lot of strength. And we need that. We need that from each other. You know, what came to mind when I was thinking about this is my mom's 87. She is very frail. She can't make it across the room without her walker. And she doesn't have the strength. She doesn't have enough strength in her hands to open packages and stuff. She doesn't have, you know, she can do some basic things. By the end of the day, she's exhausted. Just regular daily things like getting meals and stuff. She really doesn't have what she needs to get through each day. But she does get through each day. You know why? She has a huge network of friends and neighbors who quite literally give her strength. She has people who run errands for her. They pick up prescriptions for her. They come in and visit and make her a cup of tea. And, you know, all of this, she has a care agency that comes in and helps fix meals, and they help her with showers and that kind of stuff. And they give her the strength that she needs to be able to continue to live alone. Now, that is really extreme, obviously. None of you is as frail as my mom. But we all need strength, don't we? We all need support. We're all finite. God made us that way. And we kind of have this idea that if I was just more efficient, I could do more. If I used more percentage of my brain power, I could get more done. I could accomplish more. I could figure it out, right? But, you know, we can't. We've got finite resources, finite time, finite everything. And we're supposed to need each other. We're supposed to need some strength from each other to complement the strength that we have that we give to other people. And friendships provide all different kinds of strength. You know, it can be very practical support. It's people showing up and helping us get our junk out of our house and into storage when we move. You know, it's that physical help. But it's also obviously emotional health, and it's that sounding board when you need to process something, and sometimes it helps to really bounce it off somebody. Sometimes it's easier, you know, if you're really not sure what to pray, it's easier to pray with a friend. It gives you strength to stay focused and to really think through what you want to pray. Sometimes it feels easier to pray by yourself, but that's not always a good thing. Sometimes it's better to get together with someone and pray, especially if our thoughts are taking us kind of to dark places. And sometimes friends give us strength in reminding us of truth when we get overwhelmed or we get confused. Ecclesiastes 4:10 says, "For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up." We're in our places of weakness, we need someone else to give us that strength. And friendships provide that strength. And also it's a strength that's very protective for us. You know, when we're alone or when we feel alone, we are vulnerable. And I think that's one of the ways that the enemy really likes to get at us. He makes us vulnerable by isolating us, which is so easy to do in our technological world, you know, and in our busy schedules. It's so easy to either be isolated or feel isolated. And then we're vulnerable. We start believing all kinds of stupid junk about God. We think, oh, he's never going to come through for me. He's not there. He doesn't really care about me. Why would he care about me? I'm a louse anyway. And we start believing all this kind of junk. You get around someone else, they can remind you of the truth. They can remind you of the truth about God. They can remind you of the truth about people. We can start believing all kinds of crazy stuff about people. They don't like me, or they're mean, or, you know, we begin to question people's intentions and all kinds of stuff. But you get around people and your perspective changes. You get reminded of the truth. And it's a huge protection for us. It's a protection from lies and deception. And it reminds us of who God is and his truth and his love for us and his care for us, and that he can surprise us. So now if we had more time, I would have us all start clapping and say, "We all need somebody to lean on." Yeah, right? It's a great song. It's true. We do. Actually, I looked up the words. They're really great. I almost put them on the screen and had us do a little sing-along, but we won't. Instead, Craig can continue on, because there's another reason we need friends.
And this kind of bleeds into the next one. So this, you know, Jill was talking about friendships are needed to be strong, but friendships are also needed, and the best word I could find is, are needed to be refined. Mm-hmm. How many of you are content with everything about yourself and who you are and your character, your personality, you know, your habits, things like that, right? Raise your hands. Well, no, that would be prideful. I am, but. So friendships are needed to be refined. And what do I mean by that? Let me read back in Proverbs 18. It says in verse 21, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." We need affirmation. We live in a world of a lot of put downs, a lot of negativity, and we need a friend that can speak life into us, and we need to be a friend that speaks life into others, because we cannot clearly see in ourselves who we are or who God's made us to be. We need someone to help do that. And I'm seeing lots of smiles out there. You get what I'm saying. We need someone that can look at us clearly, objectively, and speak truth, speak encouragement into us, speak life into us, because we do live in such a negative, critical world. And so if no other place in the church, there needs to be these godly friendships that build you up instead of tearing you down, because we get that in so many places, you know, in the media and things. It's just, there's always that message of you're not good enough, you're not measuring up, that's why you need to buy this and join this and do that. And, you know, and I've just discovered that, you know, that I have very few Facebook friends compared to you, and so I need someone to encourage me that I'm actually okay, and, you know, things like, so we need that kind of thing. And so, but not just encouragement. We need friends that will speak truth into us, because it becomes a false relationship if it's only all the time, hey, bro, you're so awesome in everything you do. It's like we need a friend that we trust who has our heart that will also speak truth into us. And so Proverbs 27, and these are tough friends to find. In Proverbs 27, verse 5 through 6, it says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. I call that the last 10%. We love telling somebody the 90% of who they are, the cool stuff, the good stuff, good job, you know, things like that. But do you have a friend that will tell you the 10% no one else is speaking? That's what this is talking about. That's called hidden love. You say you love me, but you weren't willing to tell me that my fly was down, or I had broccoli in my teeth. You know, being funny, but there are things in our life that I want to be able to sit down with, you know, an intimate friend, and you know, have them tell me this is an area of challenge, an area for you to work on, because I don't want to stay the Craig I am today, you know, for the next decades. I know God's got more for who I am. I know God's got more for who you are, and you need a friend to help you do that. I had a pastor who was just, you know, he's an awesome guy. He's now retired, older than I am. I respect this guy so much. And we're having lunch, and he's telling me just all these really encouraging, positive things. And I was like, oh, thanks, you know, that's really cool. And, you know, hey, tell me something that I need to work on. His face went flush, man. That is, he didn't know what to do with that question. But it's like, do you want to hear it? I want a friend that will help me grow in that way. And so friendships are needed to be refined. And then we want to close with this last one.
Yeah, we also, you know, we need different kinds of friends to make our world a little bit bigger and to give us a fuller picture of who God is. If you're only friends with people who you like, people who are like you, who kind of like the same things, they don't challenge you, you know, it's just easy to be around them, your world tends to be very narrow, and your worldview ultimately gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And as the criteria for who you're willing to spend time with become more strict and more exclusive, your world just shrinks. And I'm sure you can all think of someone who's like that, who, you know, they just have a certain little zone and we don't go outside of that, right? But you know what? Each one of us is made in God's image. And even the people who are socially awkward and who are difficult to hang out with, you know, those are the ones that we need to make friends with the most for their sake and for ours. Because none of us carries all of God's image. We all carry different parts. And so together, we make up a more complete picture of God. That That's what it says in 1 Corinthians 12. We're all different parts of the body, right? You can't look at an elbow and say, oh, now I know what the body's like, right? You've got to look at the whole picture. So we really need that. We see different pieces of God in each other, and we get a bigger picture of what the world's like. And one of the best things about church is anyone can walk through those doors. Anyone. So we get to develop friendships with all different kinds of people, you know? People we might otherwise never talk to. We'd never get to be part of their world. They'd never get to be part of our world. We get to hear opinions and ways of thinking that we might never consider. We get to be exposed to very valid ways to do life that are completely different from the way that we would think of doing it. And that's awesome, because it expands our view of the world God made, and it also expands our view of God, which is really cool.
And so where we want to end with the last point this morning is to say, be a friend because you have the best one. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? What does that even mean? You know, it's like, well, if I was to ask you to write down on a piece of paper right now, and you could even do it literally, write down your three best friends. What names would you write down? There's a quote by a Ralph Waldo Emerson I've always appreciated deeply. The only way to have a friend is to be one. You know, many times, you know, we'll find our way back to church because we need friends. And then we sit there and we wait for someone to come up and say, I want to be your friend, you know? And I've had, you know, people just tell me how, you know, hey, no one's asking me to be their friend. Well, Ralph would say, have you tried to be a friend? You want a friend, be a friend. But as I reflected on this statement, because I think it's true, it's inspiring, yet as I reflected upon it, I found it wanting. Because as I reflected on my own life of friendships, I had a best friend, you know, growing up, met in middle school, became best friends in high school. We biked everywhere. We even biked from San Jose, California to Oregon. We built cars together. And as we got into our 20s, college and stuff, the relationship changed because I changed, meaning I became more self-centered and selfish. And even though, and so in all that trying to be a friend, the friendship failed. You know, I'm putting it on me, because the friendship I started having was just for what I got out of that, you know, got from Dave and what I, you know, and took advantage of the friendship and things like that. And so I recognized that if I want to be a friend, I don't have it in me to be the best friend consistently. And so this leads me as I reflected on what is the most powerful, you know, story, picture of friendship. And it comes from 1 Samuel 18. And it says in 1 Samuel 18, and it's talking about David who killed a Goliath. Matter of fact, David standing with Goliath, he made his best friend when he's holding Goliath's head in his hand, dripping with blood, you know, and he's talking to the king, Saul. And it says in here, in verse 18, 1 through 4, as soon as David finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan is King Saul's son, by the way. And so he's about David's age. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan, verse 3, made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. And so there is a picture. And if you read the story, and I encourage you to read the story of David and Jonathan, because it is a story of a true friendship. And that is, for me, becomes a picture of who Christ becomes to us. And so as I close with these final words, I want to invite the worship team to come Because this is in this what Christ does for us. He knits our souls together. He makes a relationship built on a covenant. He robes us, and he clothes us in his own robe, his identity, and he equips us for a calling. Because what happened, what's so profound in this friendship with Jonathan is Jonathan was next in line to be king. But he looks at David and something got knitted in their souls. There was something that like a divine connection. And he became what would be called a soul mate. And then Jonathan entered into, even though it's a friendship, he chose to make a covenant. And a covenant is something that he offered David, even though David had nothing to offer him. And then it's a promise of a friendship that will go through the tough times. And then Jonathan takes his robe and puts it on David. And a robe was a symbolic of royalty. And even though he had the right to the kingdom, I think there was something spiritually in Jonathan. I don't know if he literally knew or sensed it, that he saw something in David. He saw something in this about-to-be friend that David may not have seen even fully himself. And that's what we do in our friendships. He saw this man of noble character and royalty, and he puts his own robe on him. And then he saw his calling. David was a warrior, obviously. If you're standing with your enemy's head in your hand, you see, this guy's called to be a warrior. And it's not just, we all have different callings, but we need a friend that sees that calling in us and helps us get equipped for it. And that's exactly what Christ does. Their friendship was intimate but non-sexual. In Jonathan's eulogy, David would say that Jonathan's love for him was extraordinary. And in comparison to the romantic of a love of a woman, it didn't even compare. That's the kind of friendship that Jesus wants to have with us. So who's at the top of your list? If it's not Jesus, that's who it needs to be. Even our best friend can fail us. And I've had that on the receiving end. Betrayed, and shocked and just, So none of us can be perfect that way. But if we have Jesus Christ as our best friend, our most intimate friend, from that relationship we can live out honestly and truly all other friendships. So let me just close with saying this. Jesus, when it comes to knitted souls like Jonathan, Jesus will knit your soul to his because he loves you. And his soul is beautiful and can't die. He weaves your life into his life, and your life becomes those very things. A covenant relationship. Like Jonathan, Jesus has made a covenant friendship with you. He has promised his love to you. He has promised to restore your relationship with the Father. Jesus has promised you an awesome home in heaven when you die. Jesus has promised to always be alongside you and his own spirit to live in you and strengthen you to obey his commands. Jesus said this covenant would bring you forgiveness and eternal life by his blood. Jesus knows there is nothing that you can really bring to this friendship except your faith. And Jesus calls you friend. All you have to do is say yes. Robed in identity, like Jonathan, Jesus sees in you what no one else can see. Jesus will certainly put his royal robe upon you and bring you into his family, his Father in heaven. But more than that, the robe represents the high calling he's given you. And you can see in the New Testament, God's given each one of you a calling and a purpose. And so not only do you have identity in him, but he will equip you for that calling. Jesus does not leave you defenseless or to fight alone. He gives you his spiritual armor and sword so you can defeat the enemy, which is still alive and real today, who wants to destroy you and kill you. But Jesus also equips you for the task. And he says, be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened. Do not be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. This is the kind of friend you have in Jesus Christ. In John 15, I'll close with these verses. Jesus says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I've heard from my Father, I have made known to you." So Jesus comes to you. And he says, "Friend." And you may not feel worthy, deserving. You may feel like you have nothing to offer God. And Jesus looks at you and he says, "Friend." And all you have to do is say, "Yes." So let's close in prayer. Bow your heads. This is so important that you go through your life with Jesus Christ as your friend, because, as I said, we need to be good relators. Everything in life is about relationships, and we cannot be perfect relators without a perfect friend, and you're only going to find that in Jesus Christ. Please do not look for it in anyone else. Do look for friends and do be a friend, but start with Christ. Our Father in heaven, when you sent Christ, you were sending more than a Savior. You were sending the Messiah who would deliver us from ourselves, from our sins, our faults, our failures. But you sent Jesus, your Son, as a friend to us in a time when we most desperately needed a friend. And you are doing that today. You're doing that this morning. You're doing that all the time. And I pray these precious sons and daughters of yours will know all those beautiful things you're offering them and how you're wanting to knit their soul to your soul because you have the perfect life. And I pray against the lies of the enemy, the false pictures and definitions of friendship and love that's out there that he's trying to put into hearts, because those just become barriers to a true friendship. And I pray, Lord, that they feel your intimate love and you would never harm them, coerce them, take advantage of them. You will only love them in holiness and righteousness and purity, and you want them to join you in this journey, and you want them to laugh with you when you laugh like you did in the gospel stories, and you want them to become the women and the men you created them to be, which is only possible in a friendship with you. So let them say yes. Say that in your hearts this morning. Say with me, yes.